Tom Wolfe has called Stanley Crouch the jazz virtuoso of the American essay. It's a pretty good description, considering the way Crouch ranges across music and literature to racial politics. His latest book is called The Artificial White Man, Essays on Authenticity. Crouch told Steve Paulson that Americans have some pretty messed up ideas about what it means to be authentic.
We have sunk down into a situation in America in which we assume that all authenticity comes from the bottom, comes from the street. It's relatively absurd to see in popular media this constant definition of authenticity through something like the rap world, in which it's always a celebration of lowlifes and thugs and pimps and types of that sort.
Well, doesn't a lot of this go back to Norman Mailer's 1957 essay, The White Negro, when he celebrated black folks as outlaw figures because they were oppressed and because mainstream society wouldn't let them in?
But the fundamental question becomes, is the Negro actually an outsider, or is Negro American culture quintessentially American? I take the second position.
Because, you know, there are some people who would say that, I mean, those people who are obsessed with being cool or wanting to be cool or be hip, that's inextricably tied into being black. It sort of raises the question, can white guys be hip?
Well, I don't know about anybody asking that question, because it seems to me that for quite some time, a good number of black people have gotten their definitions of coolness, so-called, from white guys in films. For instance, James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart were very influential on black guys in the 30s and 40s who were street guys. Now, we know now that people like Michael Corleone and Tony Montana, these two fictional characters in The Godfather and in Scarface, have become cultural icons in the rap world. So there's always been an exchange in terms of what's cool, what's not cool, who's in, who's not in.
So the most famous example of a white cultural figure ripping off black culture is that there's that quote from Sam Phillips in 1953, you know, if I could get me a white boy with that black sound, I could make $1 million. And supposedly that explains why he went after Elvis. You're saying that's way too simplistic to assume that white people are always trying to find the underlying black coolness somewhere else.
Yeah, well, the first thing is that that's not really how culture works. Culture works on the basis of what people assume is good. I don't see why, if a white guy who comes from a background in Seattle hears Louis Armstrong on the radio playing the trumpet and wants to play like that, I don't see how that's ripping somebody off. That's acknowledging a monumental statement of great value. That's the way the United States works, is people trade back and forth. And I think that Elvis Presley would have sung the way he sang anyway, because he liked that particular sound that he had, that it was in the air. Or Benny Goodman is a Jewish American guy whose family has roots in Russia, who grew up on the south side of Chicago, and who, if you listen to in his interviews on the radio in the 1930s, he sounded like a south side Negro. Now, he changed his accent later, and when you hear him on recordings, he absorbed that. That's what he grew up with. That was what he found that would allow him to express himself.
So you're saying there are real dangers to saying, okay, this is black culture, I don't know, let's say hip-hop, for instance, and something over here is white culture, I don't know, surfer dudes. Those are too simplistic, those kinds of racial divisions.
Oh, yeah, because the number one first thing is the whole hip-hop phenomenon for many years has been about appealing to suburban white kids. You know, I mean, hip-hop is primarily an audio safari that allows white kids who would have in the 19th century dreamed about getting on a boat and going to darkest Africa or India or someplace and going out and being among savage natives, that they now can go to Tower Records, put down a $20 bill, and take an audio safari into the jungle of urban America.
I've never heard that phrase before, audio safari. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, it's, these guys know what they're doing. It's just like You know, Eminem, he was grown by Dr. Dre. 8 Mile is a Tarzan movie in which the natives end up submitting to the white guy, whose authenticity as a white guy from a trailer camp, right? White trash, so-called, makes him more authentic than a black guy from the middle class who's rapping. So it's a Tarzan movie.
Hmm. Now, we were talking earlier about what it takes to be hip or to be seen as hip. Is hipness something you care about? As a cultural critic, does this idea interest you?
Well, I mean, it's okay, but the first question is, from whence comes the definition? It's of absolutely no significance to me at all what some teenagers think about anything other than being a teenager. You know what I mean? I mean, some 16-year-old, I'm supposed to care what he thinks about world politics or the national religion or the budget or anything. Be a kid.
What about older people? And I mean, I guess Quentin Tarantino would be seen as, you know, a quintessentially hip guy, or, you know, even older, Bob Dylan. Does that aura of hipness do anything for you?
No. See, I don't see anything about either Bob Dylan or Quentin Tarantino that is hip in the way that, say, when he actually was hip, that Miles Davis was hip. That's a different kind of thing.
Explain that.
There's a quality of hipness in the dance routines that Fred Astaire did at his very best that haven't been exceeded by anybody of any color. There's something about the sheer ease with which Astaire does what he does. And I agree with Lincoln Kirsten that American virtuosity is about the fact that the very difficult is made to seem simple. And part of the essence of what we call cool is making something that's very hard to do seem easy. That's what the whole term cool comes from. He's not sweating enough to bring it off. She's not panning to do it. It's just something almost as easy as rolling out of bed. Now, of course, it isn't, but that's the illusion, and that's where the illuminated presence comes from in terms of those kind of people.
Is that partly what Miles Davis's mystique was all about, that he made everything look so easy?
Yeah, and he underplayed. There was a lot of subtlety in his playing. He wasn't a blaster. He helped to expand the identity of the trumpet to include a large number of subtle and romantic, even melancholy kinds of statements. Now, he could blast, though. He could blast, but that wasn't what he became famous for.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the women liked him. See, if you put an audience of women together, right, and there are 3 walnuts on a table, and one guy comes in there and he has a sledgehammer, and that's how he gets inside the walnut. Then the next guy, he comes in there and he has a nutcracker, and he gets inside the walnut like that. Then there's a third guy, and just by simply rubbing the walnut some kind of way, the walnut opens. He's the one they're gonna be interested in.
That's great.
Stanley Crouch talking with Steve Paulson. Crouch's latest collection of essays is called The Artificial White Man.